Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson in the Allstate Showcase studio. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Come join the conversation. I'm joined here in the studio by Sean Healy, who's the Civic Learning and Engagement Scholar at the Colonel Robert R. McCormick Foundation. And Sean, welcome back to the show. I've had you on before, and I enjoy having you on only because as a reporter, to me, it's all about civic engagement.
Right.
And civic engagement can't start soon enough.
Right.
And one of the issues that you're focused on is, as I've discussed before, the fact that you might have thought you had a civics class in high school or whatever. Illinois does not require you to take civics class.
Correct. Yeah, we're one of 10 states that doesn't require students to pass a civics or government class before graduating high school.
You have to take a Constitution test.
Right. Yeah, there's a mandate to teach the Constitution in both middle school and high school. And it's often perceived as a multiple choice test that students need to pass in order to graduate.
But that doesn't get to the heart of understanding the true nature of civics and civic discourse and civic engagement.
Right. Yeah, it only speaks to knowledge about institutions of government, which, of course, is important. But you need to engage with the current issues, need to be knowledgeable about your surrounding community, the democratic processes like lawmaking and voting. Those are all critical to being an engaged citizen. And really, that knowledge part of the equation is only part of that.
Yeah, it's kind of what I call the why part.
Right.
You as a reporter, you write stories, and it's who, what, where, when, and how. But you never, the real story is the why part.
Right.
And if you don't have the context to engage,
right?
And frankly, I think that's a part of the diminishing part of the society today, right, in the short attention span theater that we live in.
Absolutely.
Today.
And then the focus on state and local government, which frankly affects us
the
much
most
more,
direct.
Right,
yes.
Right.
The, right.
So if we do teach about civics and politics and government, it tends to focus on the national level, which is of course important, but needs to be balanced by,
sure,
what
it's
happens.
Everybody, all the attention grabbing of who's running for president and all of that,
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
Except what really affects you, and frankly, that's part of why I never went and worked in Washington,
right,
is because it's the local stuff.
Absolutely.
It's the local things.
Right.
So you have, there is legislation in Springfield that has made it one step. It's,
yes,
passed the House, now over in the Senate, which would finally require civics education. And I want to pose this to you because I know it was somewhat of an issue, even though I think it got over 80 votes,
yes,
in the House. Is, we're in a government structure now that is opposed to mandates,
right,
and I know there was some criticism about, at a time of limited budgets and those kinds of things, why are we now looking to impose another mandate on schools at a time when both cities, municipalities, school districts are looking to try to reduce mandates?
Right.
How do you answer that question?
Yeah, it's a tough time to make an ask like this. You're absolutely right, there's an allergy, and it's probably a good one, to unfunded mandates. So not just mandates, but how are you going to pay for this? And anytime you ask schools to do something else, there are costs, and we acknowledge that. Also looking at the state of the state and the finances here, it's not a great time to go ask for new,
exactly,
for new dollars, and we knew that going in. So it's a tough time to do this work, but thankfully, through the leadership of the McCormick Foundation, the Chicago Community Trust, a number of other local foundations, corporate funders, we've raised a number of dollars, in fact, in excess of $1 million annually for 3 years to support the teacher training that we think is necessary to implement this bill. So that's where the costs lie. We looked at other states that had done this. Florida did this 5 years ago. They train teachers to the tune of about $800,000 annually. So we've raised more than that. We have actually fewer students in Florida. We have more schools, fewer students.
Right.
So we think that's a roughly equal, and we've raised, we think, sufficient dollars to make this a funded mandate.
Now, was obviously passed the House.
Yes.
What do things look like in the Senate?
Well, we're working hard doing outreach. It's in the Senate Education Committee on Tuesday, and we've been in conversation with senators on both sides of the aisle. very favorable so far. And we as you mentioned, had great success in the House. We got 81 votes, got half of the Republican caucus. That's where a lot of the concerns, sure, reasonably, I think, are on unfunded mandates. But as I said, I think we've addressed that for a number of folks. So outreach is ongoing, and we have some good commitments already from senators to vote yes.
Now, we were talking off the air about the fact that, I guess, what, roughly 80% of schools do offer some kind of civics education, but it's that word, some kind.
Right, right.
That's really what the heart of this legislation is about.
Yeah, most schools, so I got some data from the State Board of Education and estimated about 88% of schools have a class. But we don't
beyond
know
that.
How many, and we don't know how many require it, and yeah, it does become a huge equity issue, and we know this as we look at data from across the country, and even specifically in Illinois. If you look at best practices in civic education, they're quite inequitably offered as we look at race and ethnicity, as we look at income, and then that translates. If you look at who's involved in our democracy, it's also highly inequitable. So essentially, we're doubling down on the kids, the privileged kids, who are probably already going to be engaged. And it's a big issue in urban areas like Chicago, CPS, for example.
Let's talk about that, which I didn't know, that CPS does not teach civics.
Right. So they don't require a
it's
civics
not a required,
course.
Right.
And so it's actually really exciting. For the last 3 years, the McCormick Foundation, the Chicago Community Trust, and the Spencer Foundation have, and also the MacArthur Foundation, have partnered to support an initiative within CPS called the Global Citizenship Initiative. So there is a civics course now in 24 high schools. They're hoping to get up to 35 next year. That's still a ways to go.
Sure.
There's over 150 high schools in the district, but one in five kids attend CPS, and the district as a whole doesn't have a requirement. So there's a big hole there. And then the other inequities we see are in rural areas. So in Illinois, as you get outside of Chicago, has a lot of rural areas and some huge inequities there, some huge poverty issues as we look at the rest of the state. So I think it's essential that every kid graduates high school in Illinois with at least one solid civic education experience. We think this law will do that.
We're speaking with Sean Healy, the Civic Learning and Engagement Scholar at the McCormick Foundation. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined here in the Allstate Showcase studio by Sean Healy, the Civic Learning and Engagement Scholar at the Colonel Robert R. McCormick Foundation. And we're discussing legislation that's pending in Springfield, passed the House, now in the Senate, and to be considered by the Senate Education Committee on Tuesday, that would mandate in kind of a standardized way, I guess, the teaching of civics in Illinois high schools. And we were talking a bit right before the break, you were talking about the issue of equality and fairness. And to me, this, you know, we're talking about obviously civics education, but to me, that goes to the heart of everything about Illinois' educational structure and the fact that for years we've been, you know, we fund our schools based by zip code and property taxes, and the issue of fair opportunity for all kids. And, you know, I figured, and as you said, that, you know, in the wealthier school districts that there is one kind of civics teaching that goes on, but then CPS doesn't require that kind of thing. And for that kind of engagement that you have to have as a citizen, I would think you can't not teach civics.
Right. Absolutely. We just had some new data this week. In fact, I think GN did a story on this. National testing data, the NAEP test came out, and it was for history, geography, and civics. But civics specifically, scores hadn't improved. Only 23% of kids were proficient. But if you looked within that, huge inequities between white students and Hispanic and African-American students, and huge differences in scores between poor and non-poor students. And then it gets back, you can break that data down and look at opportunities like discussing current events, volunteering in the community, doing simulations of lawmaking or voting, and it's highly likely that those white, non-poor students are having those opportunities. It's highly likely that those non-white, poor students are not.
And I mean, arguably, it's the students from poor communities, minority communities, where the civic engagement process is truly how we can try to cure some of the inequities that exist.
Right. It's where democracy isn't working and desperately needs people in those communities to be engaged. And we're not, unfortunately, we're not equipping young people with the tools to do that.
The other thing, too, and you know, as a reporter covering politics and voting, and I, you know, I hear all the time about, you know, candidates that are reaching out for the youth vote and mm-hmm. things like that. And to be honest with you, I think that's fine, but I tend to discount it because I know that proportionally the it's the older voters right. are the more core solid people that go to the voting booths. But I got to think if there was a more standardized, uniform and good way to get kids involved, yep. that would also show up at the voting booth
right.
as well.
Yeah, we have empirical evidence that, in fact, there was a great study of the 2012 election by an organization called Circle out of Tufts University, and they found that young people who are exposed to these best practices I'm talking about, best practices that are embedded in our legislation, were more likely to vote and more likely to be informed voters, because we don't want just more voters.
Right.
We want people that
you know what they're doing.
And we know that good civic education leads to that.
So when you talk about best practices, what are you talking about here?
So the most powerful thing, I think we talked about this back in October, the most powerful thing, and I know this will be music to your ears, is discussing current events. It's really the lifeblood of our democracy. It needs to happen every day in our classes. Lots of community service happening in our schools, which is a great thing. Our young people are volunteering at record levels. But it's important to tie it back to what they're studying.
Mm-hmm.
An example I always use, it's not just serving in the soup kitchen. It's talking about why we need soup kitchens to begin with. So it's really connecting it back to those political issues, those underlying political issues. It's simulations of democratic processes. So reference this a couple of times. It's the mock elections, the mock trials. Engaging students in a lawmaking process. I got to do something like that when I was a teacher out in West Chicago, and we had a semester-long government simulation. And,
really?
And so kids are literally members of the General Assembly. They declare parties.
Now, did they get anything more done in your class than they do in Springfield?
Highly productive. In fact, about half of the bills came out of committee.
Bills coming out of committee, that's novel.
And they all got votes on the floor, so...
So we've got a question from a caller
sure.
who wants to know, so this would be, under this proposal, it's funded for 3 years. What happens after that?
So we think there's some major upfront implementation costs. So that's why the extra dollars have been raised. There's a number of organizations, dozens actually, they're already active in this space. They've already committed resources to supporting this course, not just in the implementation phase, but going forward. My foundation, several other foundations, but I can speak for my foundation, on an annualized basis, we invest about $1.5 million a year just in supporting this work. So the supports are ongoing. They're in place. But the new dollars have been raised to support implementation on the front end. So we think there's some higher costs up front. But then lots
right.
of organizations.
So in establishing this kind of program, it's the upfront costs.
Right.
And then, but after that, the costs
right.
are not the same.
And there's no dearth of resources. Frankly, we could use some help. And I know there's a congressman coming on in a little bit. We could use some help at the national level. The federal government hasn't funded social studies at all for the last 5 years. And there's some hope on the Senate version of the No Child Left Behind rewrite that there'll be some funding for that purpose to support programs that serve particularly urban and rural areas that do innovative practices. I know you've talked before about the Mikvah Challenge.
Right.
They do some great work locally in getting kids involved in elections. The Constitutional Rights Foundation, Chicago, another organization that does that work. So funding at the federal level is also critical. And it doesn't take a lot, but literally no funding for the last 5 years for this type of work.
Well, and we're talking about lobbying the General Assembly in Springfield, let alone when you start
right.
getting into Congress and federal funding issues. And, you know, then you get into the ideology of should the federal government be even involved in
right.
education funding and those kinds of things. But have you gotten any indication or contact with the governor's office on this?
We certainly reached out to the governor's office. We haven't heard anything negative. We're going to continue to do that outreach, but nothing specifically in terms of feedback from the governor's office to date.
What do you think is the biggest deficit when it comes to civic education right now?
I think, frankly, it's just that opportunity. The deficit being that every student has exposure to these best practices. Every student, and you know, it goes back to maybe something we said earlier, particularly focused on state and local issues. So my sense is that's where the biggest deficit is. But it's not just teaching that. Frankly, getting a course instituted in our schools would be a hollow victory if we didn't do the right things in that course. So
like when you were teaching, I mean, did kids understand or did they have just a rudimentary knowledge of government, but they didn't? It's more about connecting them.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. So I would suggest, just like, you know, the parallel, if we talk about the orchestra at a school and you need to practice the instruments prior to the concert. And to me, the same is true of democracy. You need to practice the instruments of democracy on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, because I kind of like the idea you were talking about, where you could just talk about the day, the events of the day, current events, that kind of thing, which, you know, now more than ever with all of the smartphones and social media and everything else, and I'm not just talking about the Kardashians here, but you know, there is all of this kind of media going on, and you know, it's the best of times, the worst of times kind of thing.
Right.
But there's no excuse not to be informed.
Absolutely.
These days. But information only goes so far.
Right.
It's the context of the information. And I mean, I guess that's why I'm so passionate about this issue, is because to me, what I try to do isn't just say, this bill passed. Here's why it passed.
Right.
Here's why it matters. Here's who's behind it, good, bad, whatever. But it's telling that why part of the story. And I think that's, frankly, that's what education is about.
I was asked in committee what the textbook for this class was. And I said, there isn't a text. My textbook when I taught was the newspaper. And I know that's music to your ears.
Thank you very much.
I think that,
can we mandate that in the bill?
I know there's not a lot of teenagers up at 7 to listen to the Sunday Spin, but I know you podcast it. That would be great homework, in my opinion, as we talk about this course.
Well, Sean, good luck in Springfield this legislation. Sean Healy, the Civic Learning and Engagement Scholar at the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Thank you so much for joining me
this
morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.